I'll be moderating today's webinar. So before we get started, I just wanted to review some of the technology slides with you. So if you're having any trouble logging on to the webinar via link, please call PTCC's 1-800 number. That is 1-800-363-7822. And I believe, Debbie, did you you did put that in the chat box, right? Did you? I think. A reminder to everybody that Debbie did send out the slide deck, and in addition to an Excel, actually it's a PDF of the example that we're going to walk through today. So if you're having any trouble accessing this webinar through link, you can refer to your slide deck. As well, we're currently recording the webinar, so we will be posting this recorded webinar on our website in the near future. So for many of you who are logged on to our webinar, you'll see the presentation on the right of your screen, and I hope everybody can see it right now. On the left side of your screen is the chat box, and I think everybody's quite familiar with that, but the chat box is public to everyone, so whatever you write will be posted and viewable by all on the webinar, as well as myself and our presenters. During the webinar, we will be pausing to take some questions throughout the presentation, and again at the end, we're going to have a good chunk of time to take questions. Many of you participated in the webinar we held last year in collaboration with Public Health Ontario entitled Developing Smart Objectives. And if you didn't participate or want to listen to the webinar again for a refresher, the recording and the slide deck are available on PTCC's website. This year, we've partnered again with Public Health Ontario and OTRU to deliver this webinar on the topic of developing your Smoke-Free Ontario work plan. This will be the second year for you to work with this new work plan template, and I think you're all familiar with the template, but I encourage you to have a copy of it that you can refer to during the webinar. It may also help you to pose questions to the presenters. The ministry did make a few tweaks to the template for 2015, and the final template was sent to you last week. We have 90 minutes, and our presenters will highlight and demonstrate the important linkages between the components of your work plan, including conducting a needs assessment, defining what tobacco control outcomes you want to achieve through your programming, reviewing the evidence base, selecting activities, and measuring the achievement of those outcomes. We'll have opportunities for Q&A, as I said, throughout the presentation and again at the end. The content for this webinar focuses on planning theory and its practical application, and it will not interpret ministry priorities or directions. Any questions related to ministry priorities or expectations related to your work plan should be directed to your ministry representative. I hope everybody can hear me. We can barely hear the speaker. Okay. Sorry, guys. I'm sorry. To help you to translate what you learned today to your work plans, the PTCC field support staff are available for consultations. Work plans are due January 10th. If you do want to schedule a consultation with one of the field staff, please contact them in the near future. Due to the volume of work plans, their time will fill up quickly. The PTCC field staff can also help to work with you to facilitate a referral to OTRU as needed for questions related to data sources, evidence to support the choice of interventions, and measuring outcomes. So our first presenter today is Sean O'Connor. He's known to the field. He's an expert in the surveillance of tobacco control outcomes, and he leads the Strategy Evaluation Working Group, which produces an annual report detailing the progress of the Smoke-Free Ontario strategy. So I'm going to turn it over to Sean. Sorry, I should also mention our second presenter is Allison Mazur from Public Health Ontario. Sorry, Allison. She's a health promotion consultant at Public Health Ontario, and she delivers consultative support to public health practitioners, and her expertise is in program planning and evaluation. Okay, over to Sean.
All right. So, yeah, I've got we've got two speakers here, Allison and myself, and I'll be going for 10 or 15 minutes. We'll have a few questions, and we'll pass it over to Allison, who will go for 20, 30 minutes thereabouts and have some questions, and I'll wrap up at the end. And so what we have here is just a slide to initiate us into this discussion. And so we can see here the life cycle of project management. Today we're going to be focusing a lot on planning and to some extent on evaluation at the very end. I should mention, I think we are all familiar with, there really should be another arrow between evaluation and initiate, a feedback loop, because it's all part of the project. You run your project, you get your results, your outcomes, and you feed that back into the next generation moving forward. So it's kind of a cyclical process going forward. So we're going to be focusing today on the plan. So that's assuming that the infrastructure is in place in terms of initiating a project, in terms of money and staffing. We're going to be specifically discussing the needs assessment and establishing the evidence base from existing projects and policies. So we're going to, like I mentioned, needs assessment is first on the agenda. And so here's a little quote, understanding the gap between current conditions and desired conditions. So obviously we're not jumping right into designing a project. We're just looking at the evidence to find out where the need arises. If we have a particular interest, for instance, in youth prevention, we're going to get into the youth prevention literature and find out what's been done, what the current conditions are. We want to know what we want to change. With that information, then we can start thinking what programs can lead to that change. So in terms of the needs assessment, kind of the first step is, again, looking at the available evidence out there from kind of a monitoring, surveillance, or evaluation point, and you really want to find out what are the available knowledge, attitudes, and behavior with respect to the particular outcomes that you want to achieve. Of course, what's also of interest is the target audience, because we're not running, typically we're not running programs that for the whole population, but we may also be running specific programs as, for instance, to youth for prevention. We may be running programs for young adults, for pregnant women, and so forth. So you want to identify your target audience. That will help you delineate your knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors that you can look for to see where it's kind of a the current context is in terms of where your program can make a contribution. You need to know where you are before you know where you're going to go. So here is a number of data sources that one could examine in the formative stages of planning. The Canadian Community Health Survey, the CAMH Monitor, OSDAS. CTADS and CSTADS are the former CTUMS and YSS, respectively. RUFIS is a Ontario survey that has a number of public health, or it's based, the sampling frame is based on public health units, so there's 20-odd public health units that are in RUFIS, and so that could potentially give you some local-level data. And there's regional surveys I've just put here at Heart Niagara, but throughout a period of time, there's a number of health units have collected various surveillance tools. The CCHS has regional data as well. It has PHU data, and on the Tobacco Informatics Monitoring System, which is a couple of links here, you can get a lot of the data that was mentioned before, and you can get CCHS at the TCAN level. The web address is tims.otra.org. We are piloting a brand new site, and I've included that site here. It's not released yet, but folks are happy to take a look at it. It's lickety-split. It's the same data. It's a different user interface, and it's, 7 or 8 times faster than tims.otru.org. Here is just a news site. Here's the news site. And so back to the original slide, if you're looking at CCHS, you can go through, hit tobacco use, and you can see the indicators here for CCHS. And CCHS has national, provincial, health unit data and TCAN data. The other data sources typically are just national with provincial samples. There is the opportunity for for us for the CAMH monitor and the Ontario Student Drug Use and Health Survey to get sub-provincial estimates. So if folks have a particular project where they want to, they have a particular target audience, and they want to know particular information about that in this kind of needs assessment. For instance, if you want to know kind of cessation behaviors, quit attempts, and so forth, or if you want to know uptake or abstinence rates amongst youth, you could talk to us, and we could see if we can get you. I mean, on here they'll have provincial estimates. You can contact OTRU, and we can see if we can get you some sub-provincial estimates. If not at the TCAN level, we can probably get at least north, south, east, west in terms of the province. So a general statement, I know there's been a focus on getting local level data. The reality is there's not a lot of local level data out there. It's important for your for the planning purposes to get that if it's available, but if not, you just move up a level. So if you don't have local level data, you can get regional level data. If there's no regional level data, you can get provincial level data. It's all evidence, and it all does speak generally to the project that you want to initiate. It may not be the ideal level, but some information is better than no information at all. Another source that you can, in terms of when you're formulating, you know, your need, and you want to know what the current rate of knowledge, attitudes, and behavior is amongst your target population, you can also look at our annual strategy report. We have about 100, 120 indicators that we've tracked over the last, close to 20 years here. And we have chapters on prevention, cessation, and prevention, cessation, protection, and a large number of public opinion questions as well. So you can start to get a sense of what's out there, what type of questions have been asked, and where the project that you're hoping to initiate, where the needs are. Just as an FYI, we will be piloting some regional reports. So we're going to take the strategy report this year, and with one or two TCANs, we're going to write regional reports. And then in subsequent years, we're looking to roll that out to other regions as well. So that will make possible to get more local level data at the hands of stakeholders. So here's an example for a needs assessment. Looking at past year smoking. So assuming you were looking at running a project amongst youth, and you have a specific project in mind, the need is kind of demonstrated by this project in the sense that, your target audience, in this case it's students, we see that it's not the past year smoking rate for young students in grades 7 and 8 isn't releasable, and then it gradually grows up to 15% in grade 12. So if this is past year smoking, you're finding in grade 10, over the past year, so that's kind of people in grade 9 and 10, it's 9%. So this tells you that there's not a lot of need for something like grades 4, 5, 6, even 7, and possibly 8. No one's smoking in those grades. So you start to narrow down your need for the eventual project or policy that you want to run by looking at these types of data. These are from OSDA, so this is Ontario data. Here's another chart just by way of looking at some of the risk factors associated with smoking amongst students. So we see here the first, I apologize for the smallness of this. Hopefully people can read it. But we see with respect to drug use problems, 87% of smokers have drug use problems, where only 14% of non-smokers have drug use problems. That's the first line. If you go down to the very bottom line, we see 8% of smokers have low self-esteem, where 7% of non-smokers have low self-esteem. So, a project that is getting at low self-esteem maybe has less utility than a project that is targeting, people with drug use problems. All youth, there's only about 7 or 8% of youth that have low self-esteem, and it's fairly matched between current smokers and non-smokers. Whereas drug use problems, it's widely different between current smokers and non-smokers. So this is a chart that was in our annual evaluation report. So it just, I should mention, obviously, you're starting your work planning with a particular focus in mind. You're not going out and looking at data at random, but if you are interested in youth and prevention, for instance, or uptake of smoking, and you're looking at running a program, then you would narrow in on data like this. So the needs assessment, like I say, you look at the available surveillance data and try to find out where the need is in terms of what's there in terms and what's desired. Just as a one last example, I mean, if you're looking at running a program to raise support for an initiative and support was, you found in this early phase that support was already at 80, 90%, it would suggest that you probably wouldn't want to carry forward with that project. You might want to move to changing their attitudes or changing their behavior, but, you know, support is more or less covered from the available evidence, which or from the available surveillance data which you've looked at. But once you've got that kind of consensus of where the need is, you can start looking at the literature or the evidence base for particular projects and policies that will address those outcomes. So, like I say, you know from this first step, you know where the need is, and then you have a desire to raise knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors to a certain level. You want to go out and look at how people have done this in terms of projects and policies. So, you know, here focusing on programs and policies that have a measurable influence on the target population. So this is, again, just like a lit review, and you want to find out from other jurisdictions how have they addressed the needs to influence the target population. So back to our example, the surveillance data indicated that, you know, smoking is starting to become a problem in high school. This suggests that, and if you go in and look at the literature on school-based programming, for instance, we find that school-based programming doesn't really work for younger grades. That is prevention programming for, you know, if you're giving prevention, detailed prevention programs in grades, you know, 4, 5, and 6, it doesn't really carry forward, and that's probably the wrong target audience. So a combination of looking at the available evidence and looking at the available literature would suggest that you want to run prevention programming when kids are just about to start smoking, you know, grade 8, 9, and possibly 10, and carrying it forward. It doesn't make sense to run it at grade 5, 6, and 7, for instance, because any prevention effects that you're going to gain from that don't carry forward as the youth age. So sources of information. To do this, you want to it's all pre-planning. You want to get a good sense of what's been done before. You can look at the gray literature, project reports and studies. You can look at the academic literature or scientific literature to find out which programs and policies have had an effect for the target population that's closely resembles the target population you're interested in. Better than that, you can look at systematic reviews. So these are just reviews of literatures. And then there's something called reviews of reviews. And so this is kind of the ideal, like Cochrane reviews and things like that, where you're looking at a wide, you know, someone has looked at the literature quite extensively and done the work for you. So you want to access this and find out, is your project or policy you're going to put in place going to have the desired impact? Just a source of information, and here today we're not really telling you kind of how to do a work plan necessarily. We're showing you that there's available resources amongst the three organizations represented here, OTRU, PDCC, and PHO. So in terms of gaining the evidence, one source obviously is OTRU. We have a library function where we've looked at a lot of gray literature and materials and academic literature, so you could jump on to this site on the OTRU site and do a search. I should also mention, too, that you can contact us. We do have an evaluation, a knowledge and evaluation support project, so you can contact us if you need help with a needs assessment or this evidence base, establishing the evidence base for a project moving forward. So what you're looking for really is the context and mechanism. So you're looking at these studies that have been published, and you want to find out what works for whom under what circumstances. And this is all essential pre-planning, or I guess it's not pre-planning, it's planning, but it's pre-implementation of a project. You don't want to jump into a project without knowing the need and without knowing the evidence base for a particular project or program. And this will tell you, this information will tell you if you're going to be replicating a project that has been done in the past, you know, identically. Now, there obviously the context may differ. You may be, if it was done in another area of the province, or another area of Canada, or in the U.S., for instance, it's not going to be a pure replication because context will matter. So you'll have to take into consideration of that information, and when you're trying to anticipate what your desired outcomes would be, it may make a difference in terms of how it was implemented in that other jurisdiction. There's replication with modification. So they've run a project, it's a good idea, you like it, but you're going to modify it to some extent. And then there's pilot projects. So there's more speaking to the fact that there's not really a lot of evidence for the project that you want to put in place, and so you're going to pilot something. In this case, if you're not basing it on an evidence base moving forward, the onus is really on you to really step up your evaluation and not to roll it out at a large level, but to pilot a project and to strenuously kind of evaluate it to find out does it work, and if it does work, then you can roll it out. So I'm speaking kind of in terms of black and white here. There's lots of gray area here, but in general, the message that we're getting and passing on is that you want to pick projects that have an evidence base. You don't want to make something up, but if you are proceeding with piloting something or doing a demonstration, you want to keep it fairly small, and you want to measure it quite extensively to find out if it does work. And if it does work, then you can roll it out in subsequent years. So with that, I'm happy to take questions on the phase of the talk, planning, both in terms of getting a sense of the need based on the available surveillance information, and then looking at the evidence base for potential projects that you'd want to put in place to better reach the outcomes that you desire.
So if anybody has any questions, you can enter them in the chat box. If there's no questions right now for Sean, we do have some questions that we have received from the field in the past, and we'll bring them up at the end if nobody asks them.
Okay, so we're just going to change speakers here.
Great. So it is Allison from PHO, and I'm just going to go through the steps in completing the work plan. I know that all of you know how to plan, but we're just kind of highlighting some of the theory around planning. I first want to take a look at the planning process as illustrated through the logic model. As you know, a logic model is a representation of a program that shows the relationships of the if then relationships. So among what does the program or initiative do, who are the recipients, and what outcomes are to be achieved. And although we normally read a logic model from left to right, in the planning process, we're actually starting from the right of the logic model and working our way to the left. Our logic model is based on the evidence, and it's based on a logical progression of activities to achieve those outcomes. So these are the steps in the logical flow in preparing the work plan. The SFO work plan template is set up in a way which makes it easy to understand the logic of the choices that you've made for your programs, but it's not necessarily in the order in which one goes about planning the program. I'm going to go into a bit more detail about the process and the linkages between these components. Sean has already highlighted for you the importance of completing the needs assessment and how it links to your objectives and the data sources for obtaining the information to help you identify the needs in your community. For example, the needs assessment section is going to highlight the local and regional prevalence rates and then specific subpopulations that you may want to focus your activities on. This is where you might also want to be thinking about the social determinants of health and whether there are disparities in tobacco use or access to programs. Following the needs assessment stage, we move into the next step of defining the long-term objectives, which are usually 5 years out. So the longer-term objectives are not necessarily going to go into your work plan, but it's based on the evidence, you are going to have some idea of what are the longer-term outcomes that you're hoping to achieve through your programs. In tobacco control, the longer-term objectives are often already defined. In the planning process, we would go to the evidence in the literature to see what can be done to address those longer-term objectives to help prioritize both our short- and medium-term objectives, activities, and outputs for the work plan. We are fortunate that in tobacco control, we have a significant body of evidence to support the longer-term objectives. The medium-term and short-term objectives are the outcome objectives that you include in your work plan. They do not necessarily have to be achievable in 1 year, but these are the objectives that will state the level of change or the impact that your activities will have on the knowledge, attitude, behavior, or behavioral intentions of your target audience. So let's look at an example for your long-term objective. So one of the long-term objectives in tobacco control is to increase cessation among adults and youth. And we know from the evidence that to reach this longer-term objective, we need to increase both the number of quit attempts and to increase the number of smokers who attempt to quit over a specified period of time. So I know that you are already familiar, most of you are already going to be familiar with SMART objectives. And as Lynn mentioned, if you want to have a longer refresher, the webinar that my colleague gave last year is on the PTCC website. But I just want to make a quick review of it before we go into the rest of the objectives. So SMART objectives are specific, meaning that they're well-defined and clear, and you want to be using action-oriented words such as increase or decrease so that it's making it easier to measure your objective. Your objective should answer the questions of who is involved with executing this program, who is your target audience, what exactly will you do for them, and where will this program be delivered. Measurable, so this is something that I know the ministry has been talking about and Sean was just talking about, of you need to be able to measure your objectives and to know whether or not you have actually achieved it. Other questions you may be asking of how much change is expected, in what direction, what data is going to show that this change has occurred, and you want to be thinking about where you're going to be getting this data, and that all comes into your work plan. The objectives need to be attainable, so they should be written within the reach of your team or program, considering the resources, knowledge, and time that you have available to you. Questions you may want to ask is how can that objective be accomplished? Given the current time frame or sociopolitical environment, is this a realistic or attainable objective? Should we scale up or down? What resources will help us achieve this objective? And what limitations or constraints stand in our way? And some of this is going to be informed based on your own past experience as an organization, and some of this is going to be you're going to be able to figure this out based on the evidence base in the literature. Second to last, objectives should be relevant. They should be in line with your program's mission, vision, and goals, as well as agreed upon stakeholders and partners, like the ministry priorities. Objectives endorsed by your community partners and stakeholders are going to lead to a greater level of buy-in from community members and participants in your program. You might want to be asking yourself, will this objective lead to achieving this organization's goals? Does it seem worthwhile to measure this objective? And does it seem reasonable to measure this objective? Finally, the objective should be timely and attainable within a specific time frame. So questions you might want to be asking are, when will this objective be achieved? And is this time frame realistic, again, with the resources and the capacities that we have available? So I'm not going to go into detail, but this is just a visual representation of what I was just discussing. A well-written outcome objective is going to include how much, for whom, what are you going to do, and when are you going to do it by. So here we have a poll, which Debbie is gonna pull up for you. So we looked at the longer-term objective of increasing cessation among adults and youth. And based on what we just talked about, I just want all of you to pick which of the objectives is not SMART. Okay, sorry, I'm just confirming that you can read. I'm going to wait just a little bit. We have 75 participants, and I have about 22 of you who voted. Okay, so I'm gonna leave it there. About half, more than half now have voted, and as you'll see, most people chose C, which is to increase the number of smokers who stay quit for 6 months or more. And the reason why this is not a SMART objective is because it's not stating how much. So what's the number, what is the percentage of smokers that you want to stay quit, a baseline, and then the number that you're hoping to achieve. And it doesn't also highlight when you would hope to achieve this. The other two, although they're not, the X and the Y, they don't have actual numbers written in there, but normally, of course, you would be putting in what your baseline and your end objective would be. So I'm just going to let Debbie go back to our slides. And we're going to continue talking about now the outcome objective. So again, sorry, I'm just going to go back because I see that Laura had asked a question about missing the time frame. So they do have the time frame as far as by December 31st, 2015. And I think maybe what you're referring to is that we don't have a time frame for the number of quit attempts that they make during a certain period, which is something that we had just discussed. So, yeah, you may want to include that you want them to make X number of quit attempts during a three-month or a six-month period. Okay. Andrea and Kristen are telling us you need to view in full screen to see the full objective. Thanks. All right. So, sorry, my slides are not advancing now. Okay, great. So again, for this longer term objective, for this longer term objective to increase cessation among adults and youth, some of the medium term objectives that you might include are the ones that we just talked about of A and B, of to increase the number of quit attempts by young adult males from X to Y by December 31st, 2015. Or to increase the number of smokers who make a quit attempt from X to Y by December 31st, 2015. And your outcome is the number of quit attempts by young adult males increases from X to Y by December 31st, 2015. And again, we want to be including numbers in that based on the evidence that you have available to you. So let's look at another example. To increase the number of colleges or universities implementing a 100% smoke-free policy from 1 to 3 by the end of the year. So one of the outcomes, of course, that they would be including in their work plan is the number. They would be looking for at least 3 colleges or universities to adopt the smoke-free policy by the end of the year. And I'm going to ask for some audience participation, and if you could use the chat box to suggest some other possible outcomes that you might want to include in your work plan to achieve this objective. So not activities, but I'm really looking at what are some outcomes that you would be looking for that would help you achieve that objective. If you could just type in the chat box one possible outcome would be that 80% of students support tobacco-free policies at their college or university. Does anyone have any other suggestions? All right. Okay. So some of the other outcomes that we might want to consider are administrative support for the policy, administrative knowledge around creating an effective policy, or student self-efficacy to lobby for changes in their school policies. And something that you'll notice with the three examples that I've talked about is that the target audience isn't always aligning with the target population for the objective. So the objective is really around the colleges and universities, but some of your outcomes might actually be for a different population, for a secondary population, which has an impact on the primary population that you're trying to address. So before I move into activities, I want to see if anyone has any questions. I don't see any typing going on right now, but if anyone wants to ask any questions for Sean or I about what we have just discussed, that would be great.
I wonder if we should also ask if nobody's writing, if anybody wants us to open the line and perhaps you actually want to verbalize your question. Let us know if you'd rather have the lines open.
All right. Well, feel free to type them in, and we can come back to them if you have any questions. I'm going to move on to activities now. So again, we're back at the process. We've completed the needs assessments, including identifying your priority populations. You have your longer-term objectives, and you've looked at the evidence as far as what medium and short-term objectives you would want to include to reach that longer-term objective. And based on that, we're again going to go back to the evidence to determine what activities are going to help you achieve those objectives. So some of the things that you want to be thinking about when selecting your activities are, what is the evidence base? For example, if we know that we want to reduce the number of youth who initiate tobacco use, what does the evidence tell us about effective activities to do that and with what populations? So Sean has already discussed that carrying out educational campaigns with fifth graders, for example, isn't necessarily going to make sense to because it doesn't affect initiation of tobacco use in high school. So that's not necessarily an activity that we would want to spend our resources on. Does it align with the ministry priorities? So the ministry has already communicated that to all of you in your annual TCAN meetings. What is the reach? What's going to have the biggest bang for your buck? How can you reach more people? Or how can you ensure that the people you're reaching are going to have the objective that they're going to have the outcomes that you're looking for? Collaboration and partnerships are very important to the ministry, and it's going to help you have stronger programs, not just in having a varied capacity of partners, but also so that you're not duplicating effort by someone else who's already working in the region and maybe has a great program that they evaluate and know that it's working with a certain population. So it's not a population that you need to be focusing on. For example, if you can work with non-traditional partners, such as landlords who may be interested in a smoke-free policy in a MUD, based on cost savings for insurance, fires, cleaning. But the outcomes for the health unit would be related to protection from secondhand smoke. So, again, we've talked about this quite a bit. Are your outcomes measurable? And if you can't measure your outcomes because it's not possible, then you probably are not going to want to do that particular activity. If you can't measure the outcome because you don't have sufficient resources, then that's when you want to be thinking about whether you can partner with other health units in your region to carry out an evaluation, or maybe you need to scale back on other activities so that you have the resources to evaluate the activities which you know are based in evidence or which you know is going to have a wider reach. And then finally, does your health unit or TCAN have the capacity to work on that activity within the specified time frame and within the resources that you have available to you? Yeah, so, okay. So we did have a question come in about do we need to include a long-term, medium-term, short-term objective for each outcome, objective, or activity? So I'm going to talk about it a little bit, but I think it'll be clearer when I'm about to go into an example that I think is going to highlight that a little bit more. But the longer-term objective is not going to go into your work plan. So those are the long-term objectives set out in the tobacco control programs. One of them, for example, is the overall smoking prevalence, and the ministry has the goal of having the lowest smoking prevalence rate in Canada. So that would be a long-term goal that we're all working towards. The medium-term and short-term objectives are what should be going into your work plans. And then what are the activities that align with those short-term objectives? And as far as the outcome, you're going to want to have outcomes for each of your activities, but those outcomes aren't necessarily the short-term or the medium-term objective that you're putting up at the top of the template. And when I go into the template, I think it'll be clearer. But for the example we talked about previously of your objective might be around the colleges and universities adapting a smoke-free policy, but the outcome objectives that you're working around might be for increasing students' support for a policy, increasing administrator self-efficacy for instituting a policy and knowing what makes up a good tobacco-free policy, et cetera, and that's what's going to be going into your outcome. But at some point, you do want to be measuring also the medium-term and short-term objectives that you've set out to achieve. That is also would need to be measured somewhere in you're not necessarily for that year, but somewhere in your planning, you need to be thinking about how you're measuring those objectives. So again, this is the same type of visual representation for your outputs. After you're determining your activities, you want the outputs of how much, for whom, of what, and when you're going to achieve that by. So how many workshops or trainings will you hold? How many consultations will you provide? How many people will you reach through your workshops, trainings, and consultations? How many radio ads? How many ad impressions, et cetera? So this is the work plan template, and I know that you all have copies, and it's not very legible on the screen, which is why we encourage you to have the template in front of you. And I'm just going to walk us through an example in the template, and I think some of the things we've been talking about are going to be a little bit clearer that way. So this is a protection example at the TCAN level. The background is that it's a fictitious community. This is not based on any one TCAN in Ontario. So in 2010, the TCAN ran a public awareness campaign highlighting the negative health impacts of secondhand smoke. As part of a broader strategy, they had to increase support for smoke-free outdoor space bylaws. And during the campaign, there was extensive media coverage of the issue. And subsequent RFIS data captured by the majority of health units in the TCAN showed that an average of 87% of the public was aware of the negative health impacts of exposure to secondhand smoke. So the majority of people understand that there's a health risk associated with being exposed to secondhand smoke, but a smaller portion of the population that lives in MUDs is aware of the fact that they're being exposed to secondhand smoke daily through the ventilation system. May not know that they're exposed to the ventilation systems, open doors, on balconies, and in common areas. And that was based on the KMH monitor from 2011 showing that 38% of MUD tenants reported exposure to secondhand smoke, and then in 2012, 33% reported exposure. The health units across the TCAN have reported that there's been an increase in complaints, and this led to the development, the TCAN developed a tracking tool for the health units that they're using in addition to the development of a consistent process, messaging, and resource dissemination when responding to these complaints. The health unit also completed an inventory of the MUZs across the region, including those that had a voluntary smoke-free policy. So now this is where Debbie emailed you the PDF of this example, because I know it's going to be really hard to read, so hopefully all of you have that or can access it in your email. She emailed it right before the webinar. But just to talk it through, the objective, one of the objectives they chose was to increase the number of multi-unit dwellings in their TCAN that adopt a smoke-free policy from 15 to 25 by the end of the year. And that's linking, of course, to evidence and to a need that they've identified in their community. So one of the activities they've chosen is to develop and implement an earned media strategy across the region. And then you'll see that the target audiences they've identified are tenants in private and community MUDs, landlords, the media, and general public. They're going to be working on this in Q1 and Q2. The partners they've listed are the TCAN Working Group, the Tenants Association, SHAF, the Ontario Coalition for Smoke-Free Housing, the Media Network at PTCC. They've listed some outputs and how they're going to measure those outputs and an outcome and how they're going to measure that outcome. So what we're hoping to get from all of you is to type into the chat box your thoughts on what are some changes that you might want to make to this work plan along this activity that are going to make it a stronger activity and a stronger work plan. Okay. I see that one person is typing. So one of the things that I would be thinking about as someone either reviewing this or developing this is that this is an activity for a TCAN with a lot of MUDs in their region. And so if it's a TCAN that doesn't have a lot of MUDs, which they know whether or not they have a lot of MUDs and how many people live in MUDs based on their needs assessment, but this is not necessarily an activity that would be carried out unless you did have a lot of MUDs, in part because it ends up targeting the general public, and it might be that you would want to do a more focused campaign on the landlords and the tenants in the MUDs themselves and not on the general public or on the media, but this is going to depend. Great. So one, Thunder Bay is mentioning that they need a pre-campaign survey to assess change over time. Great. So they have a post-campaign survey, but you might remember from the background that we actually didn't have a pre-campaign survey to know what the awareness around a potential of exposure to secondhand smoke in MUDs was. The time frame is Q1 and Q2 for this particular activity, and their goal is to increase the smoke-free policies by the end of the year. So they have determined that in the first part of the year, they actually need to be working on increasing awareness of the risk to exposure to secondhand smoke, and then they might have some follow-up activities in the rest of the year to really be working on the actual policies. The landlord organizations as possible partners. Yeah, that is a really good a really good idea of another group to be working with. In that same area for partners, I probably wouldn't include the TCAN working group because this is the TCAN itself who is completing this this work plan. So it might be at the health unit level they would want to include the TCAN working group, but as the actor, I wouldn't include the TCAN working group as your partners necessarily. Is the activity based on evidence that a media campaign will increase smoke-free months? This is a great question. And so it's not a mass media campaign, and I think it's not totally clear. I think when you first read it, you have to read a little bit carefully that they're looking for an earned media strategy, but I think that is still a valid question of, is there evidence around increasing? I think there's a two-part question of, is there evidence around the fact that increasing awareness of exposure to secondhand smoke and muds is going to increase your support and desire for the assumption is there, and then the folks at OTRU would have to tell us whether or not there's actual evidence around this. In general, social marketing campaigns and communication campaigns don't tend to move necessarily behaviors, but they do tend to move knowledge and attitudes. And so I can't speak to whether or not there's evidence around smoke-free muds in particular, but in general, most of the evidence is that mass media campaigns or social media campaigns or earned media campaigns are going to be really effective on knowledge and awareness, but not necessarily on behavior. A couple of other things that I noticed when looking at this is the output. The last output is 50 calls to health units across the TCAN as a result of the campaign. And if I was reviewing this, I would want to be thinking about who's calling the health unit and why they're calling, and really specify what your concern is about those calls. Do you want it that people are calling to complain about their being exposed to secondhand smoke? Do you want it that people are calling to ask, what can I do about this in my mud? But to have a real clear idea when you're creating your media strategy of what are you asking people to do, what do you want the action to be based on that activity? I would also, in the performance measurement of outputs, I would probably remove the number of resource packages disseminated to tenants and landlords, which is the second performance measurement output. A couple of things on that. First, it's not related to this particular activity. Second, I probably wouldn't include this in general in a ministry-level work plan. So it might be something that you're tracking internally as part of your own performance measurement, but it's a little bit too in the weeds for the ministry, and we want to be focusing on higher-level activities for the ministry. In the anticipated outcomes, you'll see that they have the post-campaign survey to measure the awareness of their campaign and the awareness of potential exposure to secondhand smoke and mud, but they didn't include that second they included awareness of risk of exposure to secondhand smoke as one of their outcomes, but not the outcome of awareness of the campaign. And you might put that in your outcome. You might put that more in your output of thinking about what was the reach. So did it reach the right people that you wanted it to reach, and how many people did it reach? And then, are there other activities that people can think of that they might want to include to achieve that objective? No. All right. And I'm assuming there are no questions because no one's typed any. So I'm going to pass it back over to Sean, and Sean's going to just talk for about 5 minutes, but we're really hoping, we're going to end this pretty shortly, and we're hoping that this is your time to ask questions. And so once we'll kind of, once Sean is finished, then really the rest of the time is really just to send as many questions as you might have about filling out this template or asking how to clarify problems that you've had with the template in the past. And if no one has questions, then I know that questions have come in to PTCC often about these templates, and so we're just going to go to some of the typical questions that come in and talk about those in general. I'm going to hand it over to Sean.
So a lot of up to now, a lot of the presentation has been on planning. This is kind of the evaluation side. So if you remember back to one of the first slides we had of the project life cycle, this is near the end of the project life cycle where you're doing the evaluation or looking at performance measures. And although it comes in that kind of logic model of a project life cycle, it comes at the end. You really want to identify the outcomes that you're measuring in your planning phase. So as was shown under the needs assessment, you look at your outcomes relative to the desired outcomes, and you can take those from the evidence from the needs assessment and just convert them to outcomes that you're going to measure downstream. But you want to have this all planned out. You know what your project is anticipating. What changes are you anticipating your project to achieve? And you want to identify those up front, and then at the end of the day, you want to measure them to see how well you're doing. So, you know, critical steps, you know, you want to assess reach. Did you reach the population that you intended? And you want to look at changes in knowledge, attitudes, and behavior. And as I mentioned, these were some of the items that we had looked at under the needs assessment. And also we looked at under the evidence base in terms of looking at the literature on like projects, what did they accomplish, who did they reach. You want to carry that forward and measure to see how you've done. So just a couple of notes on this. There's a couple of ways that you can do this. We mentioned a large number of population surveys at the front, like the Canadian Community Health Survey and RUFUS and CAMH Monitor. Those aren't going to really be of use to you now because those are set surveys that don't have program and policy exposure for the most part. You're going to need to develop tools that will get at this for the most part on your own. They're not on your own, but you'll have to do it independently. Of those population surveys. You can borrow questions from existing surveys, which is always great. It doesn't have to be a survey by any means. You can do qualitative or quantitative assessments of program or policy performance. You can like rate from interviews, key informant interviews, to surveys, to a whole host of other methods, which we won't get into because it's different. The methods you would use would be different for every project, and it would be different depending on the budget. But in general, you want to assess these steps. You may want to assess change from baseline. In that sense, then you would want to have measures at baseline to see how you've changed over time. Or you may just want to look at, you know, if you don't do a baseline data collection, you could do it at the end, and you may want to look at people exposed to your program and people not exposed to your program. And obviously, if they've been exposed to the program, you would expect changes in knowledge, attitudes, and behavior. And so you can do it methodologically by looking at exposed, unexposed to see if there's that change right there. So as mentioned when I showed that project life cycle, there's a, you know, you're planning, you're executing your project, you're validating results, and you're contributing to an evaluation, and that is really feeding back into practice. And by practice, I mean just everyday practice that you have in your local health unit. And it also feeds back into planning for the next iteration of a project or the particular project you're working on, or it could be feeding back into just the directions of of what planning you have next for another project. Okay, so just give me a sec. I'm just looking if there's any questions. Okay. So, you know, as I mentioned at the front, this isn't necessarily a talk of how to do things because there's lots of expertise on the call and we recognize that, but we just wanted to just kind of review what could be done or what should be done and offer our support. So obviously support, there's large internal support that health units at TCANS have and really draw on those supports to for the needs assessment and looking at the evidence base that's there, and then also planning the actual program in terms of the outcomes and the activities. Use your internal store staff. There's also a number of resource centers that work in tobacco control. I've mentioned just a couple here, the Program Training and Consultation Center. They've offered to look over the work plans and if you you want someone to look at some of the activities and the various facets of the work plan, by all means, get a independent body like the Program Training Consultation Center to look at it. If you want some assistance right from identifying particular needs or what is the evidence base for a particular project, contact us. We have a particular initiative funded by the Ministry of Knowledge and Evaluation Support Initiative that can provide services around the needs assessments and the evaluation or looking at the evidence base right from pointing some resources to you to actually taking on those responsibilities and giving you information on the evidence base. And we can also be involved in the later stages of evaluation as well. So how can we help? Just a couple of things, as I mentioned, that evaluation or that knowledge and evaluation support initiative that's funded by the ministry that OTRU conducts can help you with your planning, as alluded to here. And give me a sec, my computer stopped working. Just give us a sec here. We got some technical assistance here going on. But as I mentioned, we can consult on various phases of planning, or we can actually collaborate on conducting literature searches and synthesis. We can look at evaluation plans, and we can submit ethics protocols to the University of Toronto, or help you submit your ethics proposals to your local regions as well. Okay, so in terms of planning and moving into methods, we can comment on instruments that you're developing, right from qualitative to quantitative instruments, and we can even develop them under your guidance as well. And we can assist with data collection and analysis and interpretation. We can, in terms of the evidence, we can discuss the results with you. We can draft reports, and we can be a partner in the evaluation process, or we can just be a consultant. As well, and I should say, as I think most folks know, this is a ministry project for us, so there's no cost to the health unit. So with that, we have a few other slides, but we're happy to take some questions on this whole process. And just give it a sec, because we are looking at the list of questions that have been asked in the margin here. So
yeah. So this first one of the email a sample that meets the requirements. Yes. The PTCC will send out the sample that we showed, but a correct sample of what we were showing. Another question around quit attempts from, so back to our example of some other things we could be looking at, of quit attempts from individuals who are living in MUDs. So our objective was really around the smoke-free policies. And smoke-free policies, the primary purpose of those is to prevent exposure to secondhand smoke. This is actually something that we were talking about the other night when talking about this webinar. So there may be some secondary outcomes as far as increasing quit attempts or increasing cessation in people who live in MUDs because it's more difficult now for them to smoke. But it probably wouldn't be the objective or the outcomes that we're looking for that particular activity. And then that second question under there, which comes up a lot, of there are so many things we could track, I would be spending all my time analyzing and I wouldn't be doing any work. And this is something I hear not just from tobacco control, but from health units. And I think there is a fine balance of not all of your resources can go towards doing activities. And some of your resources have to go towards monitoring and evaluation. And the reason why you have to do it is because there's no point in spending time carrying out activities if you don't know that they're effective. So you may know that based on evidence they're effective, but even if you're replicating it to a T, it's a slightly different population and it's a slightly different time from when that activity occurred. And so there needs to be some check of making sure that the activities that you're doing are leading to the outcomes that you're expecting to occur. Otherwise, you and your colleagues are spending a lot of time and money on a project which maybe isn't affecting the outcomes that you're hoping to affect. Is there anything else you want to say
about
that?
So, no, that's good. Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, you don't have to measure everything. You're really laying out what you're measuring up front in your planning cycle, right? It's not that you run your project and then you try to collect this evidence or all this evidence and try to, you know, you're not quite sure at that point what to collect. You should really be planning up front. What is your program? What do you anticipate your program changing? Right? We're running projects not for the sake of a project. We're running projects to change outcomes, objectives. So you're looking at, you know, you have a desired outcome in mind, and that desired outcome may have short or intermediate measures to support that you've actually achieved that. And that's really in a sense what you're measuring. You're trying to support the notion that your project that you've initiated has achieved the desired outcomes that you've identified in your planning cycle. You may ask a whole bunch of other questions. You don't have to ask them, but if it's a formative type of piece of work and there's not much research on this and you want to collect evidence to know how to advance the program to a next stage, you may want to collect a number of other pieces of information that aren't the key piece of information you need for the work plan. But that's just depending on where you see your project moving towards. So a question from Lindsay. These evidence statements are overall for the complete program, not broken up by cessation, prevention, enforcement. So, yeah, specifically, you know, when you're doing the needs assessment, you're doing the needs assessment on a particular target population and you want to achieve a particular outcome. So you may want to reduce the uptake of smoking amongst high-risk kids in school, and you're just measuring the outcomes relevant to that population, and you're not looking at cessation or other things. So very specific, you know, you have a desired outcome. You're looking at a project that will address that you hope that will address those outcomes, and it's, you know, a very narrow focus.
I just wanted to add to that, Sean, in terms of that question. So this year, one of the changes the ministry did make to the template was that the needs and evidence sections, well, it's really the needs section, the evidence is a new section on the work plan template, but there's one section for you to put that information as opposed to breaking it up by cessation, prevention, and protection. And the reason for that is it's comprehensive tobacco control planning. So you really want to think about your full program. Although you're breaking out your objectives and your activities by the three pillars, there's linkages between those pillars as well. Because if you're implementing a MUDS campaign or you're working towards increasing the number of smoke-free MUDS policies in your community, in your region, there may be other objectives and activities that you'll outline in your cessation template as well, or the cessation tab as well. So there's one section to write your needs, and it's for your full program. I hope that's clear.
So there's a question here from Halton. How much time does OTRI require to review plans? And, you know, that's a tough question because we don't know how many requests we're going to get. You know, if we get one request, we're going to have much more time. If we get 36 requests plus 7 TCANs, we're going to have less time. So there's, you know, there's a time period for this current planning cycle, which, you know, I think the PHUs and TCANs have until the end of the year to get something in, and there's a cycle next year as well, so there's a whole year. You know, I would contact OTRU and get in the queue, and we'll have an initial phone call with you and find out to what extent, you know, you want us to look at your whole project plan versus a particular project you're having trouble with, and we can work with you to assess. You know, we'll just be honest with you. We'll tell you how much time we have once we know what the project involves, and we'll be able to streamline that with respect to other requests that were coming in. But we'll do the best we can.
Okay, and then I also wanted to thank Stephen for putting a link in the chat box to the article about the effectiveness of California's smoke-free mud media campaign at the community level. This is something I was going to go back to when we got to this Q&A portion of the webinar. As we all know, there is a strong evidence base out there for MUDs and for media, and California has actually done a very good job of combining these two. So please see that link. Thanks, Stephen.
So there's a question from Tanya. It was mentioned that the outcomes identified in the work plan relate to a particular activity and not the overall objective, clarifying that we don't need to say explicitly how the overall objective is being met. Hope that's clear. So I'll have my say, and others can kind of jump in. But you know, you want an objective that's grounded in the evidence. And so you are working towards that objective. It's kind of project specific. You have an objective, and you're putting in place programs and policies to reach that objective. Now the reality is, you know, you may have an objective of we'll use the example that was used in the presentation to have a policy on MUDs. That may be the overall objective. Now that may take two or three years, and you may be at a formative stage, and so you may have a project that has an objective like that, but you know that it may be a 2 or 3 year project because you're not going to achieve that in some circumstances for 2 or 3 years, and so there may be some intermediate or short term objectives like raising awareness of multi-unit dwelling participants, getting them to contact their administrators and the public health units, and there's a whole bunch of intermediate measures one could work on initially. But if that is your, you know, like, so that is just kind of a timing in terms of, you know, if it's a 1 year project or a 3 year project. But for the most part, you do want your objectives to be able to be achievable. They should be measurable and achievable, and then you can qualify that by having the context in there is will the particular time you have available for that initiative, will it actually achieve that outcome? Do you want to add anything?
I'll just add to that, Sean. So I think for the folks on the line who are thinking about completing their work plan template, I mean, that was another change that the ministry made to the template this year. That was a good change. They pulled the objective out onto its own line. So I think that was a really good change. We just have to remember that when you're listing your outcome objective and the activities underneath, and as Allison talked about earlier, there are outcomes for each of those activities, at some point, either within that year or perhaps within the next fiscal year, there will be, you will have to note there that you've achieved that outcome objective. So what you're working towards is that collection of activities to achieve that overall outcome objective. So at some point, there will be a note in your outcomes that you've achieved that outcome objective.
So I think what we're going to do is open the line We have about 15 minutes left, and that way, if there's anyone that's having problems typing into the chat box, then you can unmute your line. We're going to open them up, but then it's star 7, I believe, to unmute your line if you want to ask a question.
Okay, so we're ready.
Is there any questions before we get to the questions?
Yes, I think so.
So just while we're waiting for some questions, just to reiterate that the objectives and outcomes in your work plan should be achievable. You put them there for a reason. It's not kind of a futuristic thing. You really want to look at the needs assessment, look at the evidence of what people have accomplished before, put your program in place, have a sense of your desired outcomes, and you want to measure them in you're anticipating reaching that the desired outcomes that you've identified in your work plan. And it's project specific, so you're not rolling up and looking at large projects or looking at large outcomes beyond the specific project you're working in. That project is an intervention. That intervention will make a change in knowledge, attitudes, behavior. You're trying to capture that change.
So we have opened the line, and so I know some people were having trouble with link. So if you have any questions, if you are on link, you can still type your question or you can ask it. And you press star 7 on your telephone keypad to unmute your line.
Should we just maybe volunteer someone to ask, just to say hi to us, make sure it's working, or do we know it's working?
Yeah. Can somebody on the line?
Well, can we just get a specific person?
Yeah. Nancy, if you can hear me, can you unmute your line and say hello to us?
Just checking our technology.
Yeah.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Perfect.
So it's just pressing star 7 to unmute your line and ask a question.
Great. So we'll just wait a few minutes here just to see if there's any questions being asked. Right.
Sean?
Yes.
Dave McWilliam here, Kingston.
Yes.
Thank you for the webinar. A problem that certainly we have here, and I think maybe others share, is determining outcomes and capacity to look for that information for a number of reasons evades us. And the questioner surveillance is a tough one to answer.
Right.
But that is one that is really causing us difficulty.
Right, I can appreciate that, yeah.
And the ability to get at outcome, on the longer term, we can do that sometimes through the larger tools, but the localized data is very difficult. So the theory of what you're speaking to and practice is difficult.
I recognize that, yeah. Not, like I said in the beginning, I was kind of presenting a black and white argument.
Yeah.
And there's lots of gray.
Yeah, and I think whatever we can do to facilitate a better collection of data that enables us to deliver, it would make our jobs much easier, because your comment about the not going into 5, 6, and 7. You know, the problem with that is that the theory of that's fine, but it's not always it's not always easy to walk away from some programs. Or on the other side is where we can try to identify something. Sometimes our numbers are so small that doing something that is of value really has very limited outcome because it's impacting such a small population.
Yeah. Well, something we can get into is that there's, you know, you have clinical populations and you have general populations.
Right.
And a lot of projects will be, I use the term clinical population, you're not addressing or you're not seeking to change knowledge, attitudes, behavior amongst a population of people. You've got just a small clinical population.
Sean, it was that it would help the webinar if you could provide us with real samples from the field for us to be able to relate to. That goes back to the question about somebody about what should something look like. That is what we're looking for. The theory of this is the same as last year. We know the theory. We need the reality.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, in general, if you're running a project that doesn't have that you aren't aware of the evidence base, but you're running whether it's a social marketing campaign or even just some sort of prevention initiative or protection initiative, if you don't have the evidence and you're not collecting the evidence, I think we're suggesting that you don't do the project.
Well, I don't think the question of evidence is the issue. I don't think public health is out there that far out of field that we're not working on evidence-based projects. The difficulty is how to make sense of them in the end.
Right. Well,
that's what we're lacking.
If a project is evidence-based, I think the work plan is suggesting that you don't have to go out and do a strong evaluation. If you're doing an evidence-based practice, you're just looking at performance measures. You don't have to do an evaluation. In the sense that you're just checking a few indicators to see that, you've reached your target, and if you've implemented it as the evidence has...
Not that simple, Sean.
Well, it's never that simple, but in terms of, you know, that's the goal, right? Yeah, you know.
Oh, maybe, but that's what I'm saying. I think we would help this webinar if you could provide us practical application.
Right. I mean, definitely take that into consideration. The challenge is that there's 100 different interventions out there, and every intervention requires a different method.
Pick a few.
Yeah.
Just give us an idea what people think are good.
Yeah, I think the problem too, Dave, is in the past we have asked for examples from the field. We'd be more than happy to take examples and work through them during the webinar. As Sean said, there's so many interventions out there. You've got 36 public health units, 17 different contexts.
I guess I'm suggesting to you, you have access to the information we provide, or you should have.
Yeah.
Look for things in there that look good.
Examples, right?
Yeah,
look for things in there that look good. Go to the people who did them and say, can we use you as an example?
Yeah, and that's the problem. We haven't been able to get the permission to use those examples.
I wonder why.
Well, said that, OTRU works with a number of PHUs and TCANs,
you do.
That's something that we can seek to get for another time. We can get the permission. We can talk about some case studies.
I agree.
So we can present
case
studies. I mean, we presented to some extent a case study today, but it was a fictional.
You
need a real one.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good input. We'll definitely consider that for another time.
Thank
get a particular initiative when we can roll out the various facets of the project life cycle and the planning for that initiative, and we can speak to the measurement of the outcomes of that project. So thanks for that.
Are there any last questions? We have about 5 minutes left. Anyone else want to ask a question over the line?
All right, so there's just a couple of slides that I think each of the organizations has.
Mm-hmm.
And as mentioned, OTRU has a knowledge and evaluation support project, which is funded by the ministry, and it's to offer assistance to PHUs, TCANs, and NGOs and partner projects, right from just having a talk to finding out how we can help right through from doing the work as well. You can contact any of the three people there. These slides will be sent to folks, and you'll have these slides. We're not the only folks that can provide support, though. There's PHO.
We also are a ministry-funded resource center, and we have an online service request form on our website. We do many of the same things that everyone here in the room does around not just the topics of tobacco control, but other health promotion topics, either workshops or webinars. And through our service request form, you can also sign up to be on our mailing list to find out about webinars or workshops that we might be holding.
Okay. And as I mentioned at the start of the webinar today, if you'd like any assistance from your PTCC field staff, and you'll see their names and the TCANs that they support on the screen, please contact them soon, as I said, because there's a large volume of work plans, as you know, and you want to make sure that you negotiate and schedule some time with them in the near future.
Just from OTRU's perspective, as mentioned, there's work plans, and by all means, the work plans can be sent to PTCC, and they can be forwarded to us. But if you have a particular project that you want assistance with, or you want to just chat with us about that, you can contact us about a specific project. It doesn't have to be the whole work plan. You may have some parts of your work plan that are well thought out. I'm sure. I know you have well thought out work plans, but there may be a couple of projects that you're not sure about. By all means, you can contact us about just specific projects as well.
Okay. So we have a question that just come in about tomorrow's webinar. I don't know if you may not have seen an email had been sent out from Debbie that actually the content of the two webinars was combined into one today, so there is no webinar tomorrow. So I'd like to thank everyone who joined the webinar today, all the participants. A really big thank you to Sean and Allison for their presentations, and a thank you to the PCCC staff as well who participated in helping to pull this deck together. So your feedback is really important to us. So following this webinar, a link to an evaluation survey will be sent out, and we'd really appreciate it if you could just take a few moments to complete the evaluation. Your input will obviously help us to improve our webinars in the future. And thank you all once again, and we look forward to hearing you again on another webinar. Take care.